WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. New this hour, the Ukrainian president's office says evacuations have halted from an area where Russia said there would be a temporary ceasefire to let women and children escape. A local official says shelling is still happening in the areas in one city in the southeast and another in the east. Evacuating the civilians could mean even more violence to come, says Fox's Jonathan Hunt in Lviv.
If you get out all of the civilians from those towns, they then essentially, when those humanitarian corridors close, and that will be up to Russia effectively when they decide to close them, it then means there's no civilians that they do not consider military targets left in those towns, so that they can just, if they choose to, lay waste to those towns with artillery and send in the troops, and they can essentially declare everything a military target.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is not happy with NATO, which has refused to set up a no-fly zone over his country. NATO leaders say that could increase tensions with Russia. Zelensky telling Europeans a victory for his country would be a victory for them, too.
And if we win, and I'm sure we win, this will be the victory for the whole democratic world. This will be the victory of our freedom. This will be the victory of light over darkness, of freedom over slavery.
In other news, the investigation continues this morning into the explosion at the Friendly Garden Apartments in Silver Spring. Montgomery County Fire Chief Scott Goldstein says they found a cut gas line in the basement but don't know the source of ignition. They're looking into the possibility that a maintenance worker fixing a plumbing problem cut it. The tragedy has tugged at many people's heartstrings. So far, more than $300,000 have been donated to a relief fund set up by the county. HHS spokesperson Mary Anderson.
First disbursements from that fund will start going out early next week.
You can donate by going to WMAL.com and searching Friendly Garden Apartments. They've been driving across the country for weeks, and today the People's Convoy is expected to reach the D.C. metro area and make its way around the Beltway. They got to Hagerstown yesterday. It started as a show of solidarity to Canadian truckers protesting COVID restrictions. This participant told 7 News.
I just think that the government, and I guess it's a sign of the times, is trying to control people just a little too much.
Police in our area are ready, including Virginia State Police. Spokesperson Corinne Geller tells us.
Virginians can expect to see an increased patrol presence of Virginia's troopers and our motor carrier safety teams.
She says prepare for the possibility of extra traffic around our region today, especially the Beltway. The truckers have said they do not plan to go into D.C. WMAL Sports, the Wizards lost to the Hawks 117-114. They play the Pacers tomorrow night at 6. Tonight, the Capitals play Seattle at 7. Traffic and weather next on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
So far, traffic is moving well, making your trip on 95 headed from Aquia Harbor in towards Lorton and Springfield. No delays on 395 from Springfield to the 14th Street Bridge. Traveling on 66 inbound and outbound at the Roosevelt Bridge, there is long-term repair work taking place, so only 2 lanes are getting through in each direction. Traveling on 270 northbound at Shady Grove Road, you will still find a work zone blocking one lane, but that is not causing any delays. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A fair amount of clouds to start the day on this Saturday, but we will see afternoon sunshine. Much warmer conditions, only reached the 40s yesterday. We'll reach the low to mid-60s this afternoon. Tonight, mostly cloudy skies, low temperatures near 60 degrees. We'll see even warmer conditions on your Sunday. High temperatures into the mid-70s under mostly cloudy skies. Chance for a few showers. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
Right now, 32 degrees in Gainesville, 32 in Olney, and 37 degrees under mostly cloudy skies here in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Now on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
Saturday Morning Update, Hour 2. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi joins us every week. He is at Newsmax.com. He is the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com and Newsmax TV. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
The eyes of the world have been on Volodymyr Zelensky, the president of Ukraine. You always have a historical perspective and a lot of comparisons in the past week to Winston Churchill. Tell us what we might not know about President Zelensky.
Well, certainly the Churchill analogy grows, and every time I talk to someone from the United Kingdom, they bring up good old Winnie and liken him to Volodymyr Zelensky. Another analogy that is sure to be heard came to me from the TASS correspondent at the White House. When I asked him what he thought of President Zelensky, he said, he's like Reagan. And I said, well, that's quite a compliment, all things considered. He said, I meant he was an actor. And this is what people have been pointing out. The background of the president of Ukraine is most interesting. He was a popular comedian and, in fact, had a very popular satirical show, Servant of the People, in which he actually played a president of Ukraine who was outspoken and a political outsider. Soon, life imitated art, and he was elected in a landslide, mainly because people thought he wouldn't engage in corruption, something that had plagued four of the previous presidents of a free Ukraine. I might add that he's quite a dancer. His long-running appearances on Ukraine's Dancing with the Stars are a viral sensation, and he was the voice of Paddington, the bear in the delightful children's story made in Ukrainian. Now, of course, with a background that's, shall we say, unusual for a world leader, he's leading. His background as an entertainer gives him eloquence. And this is why his appearances online, rallying the people and speaking to the world, draw so much attention and praise. Dressed in his workout clothes with a three-day-old growth, President Zelensky is comfortable in the Russian language, more so, actually, than in the Ukrainian language. And he frequently speaks to Russians, pointing out that their argument is not with the people of Russia, but with Vladimir Putin. And he's even attracted people from throughout the world. He said, come help us. Just as the Ukrainians helped defeat Hitler, we'll now defeat Putin. And indeed, all over the world, people are volunteering to come and help the embattled Ukrainian army. From Japan, 70 soldiers have gone to fight alongside their Ukrainian comrades. In France, a brigade of French legionnaires has also joined the fight. And from the United States, there's reports that Ukrainian small businessmen, contractors, and laborers are taking vacations early so they can fight and save the homeland. It's almost as though a good part of the free world is saying, Zelensky, we are here.
Let's turn to the White House and Capitol Hill. Of course, President Biden, State of the Union address this week. There's been a lot of talk about his lack of ability and even effort to unify the country. Did he get any closer to unifying the country with the exception of we're all unified to support Ukraine?
No, that was it. And even his strong emphasis on Ukraine and the fight for freedom was something that just drew a contrast between his performance and that of his counterpart in Kyiv, Volodymyr Zelensky, where Zelensky rallies the people and even has brought his former opponent in the last presidential election into the front lines in the fight against Russia. Joe Biden has yet to attract any prominent Republicans to his side. He talked about climate change, and of course, he went on about inflation, something that plagues all of us. And he made a passing reference to his Build Back Better bill, which hasn't started. And, oh, yes, he said we'll have an infrastructure decade, a reference to the infrastructure bill. Beyond that, there was no big vision for tomorrow, nothing that Republicans could join hands with him on. It was a very partisan speech designed to rally the base. Does this upset this reporter? No, because I've seen it just before midterm elections. Presidents do it all the time in their State of the Union messages as they prepare to go on the campaign trail.
You mentioned Joe Manchin. Some rumblings about him and some of the Biden legislation that has failed so far. What's going on there?
Well, he slew the president's legislative child, the Build Back Better bill, because it was too costly, and its climate change section would have acted in a very hostile way to West Virginia's coal mines. That said, Joe Manchin is going to work with the White House and with Democrats to come up with a kinder, gentler, and cheaper BBB. This was the story on Capitol Hill. One thing I'll say about Joe Manchin, for a politician who's not up in the election year, he sure knows how to get his name out.
Well, one congressman that's not going to worry about getting his name out after 2022 is from Florida, and he's a Democrat, and he's, what, number 31?
Exactly. Ted Deutch of Florida, yet another Democrat with a safe seat, and now the 31st Democrat to say, out of here. He announced recently he would not seek re-election and is taking over a private sector organization. So that means the man from Florida will resign before his term is up. I might add that 31 figure is just 9 short of the modern high of Democratic House members who are at the exit door. The 40 who left, the high number for our time was in 1992. Now, in that election year, Rick, Democrats were helped to leave by the scandals surrounding the House bank, in which many members were found to have been overdrawn and not receiving any punishment. It led finally to the abolition of the House bank. There's no overriding scandal, no stench on Capitol Hill and over the Democratic Party. It's just low poll numbers for Joe Biden and a recent ABC News Washington Post poll showing 47% of American voters wanted Republicans in charge in Congress compared to 40 who want Democrats in charge.
John, 3 big stories in Texas politics this week, starting in the governor's race.
Governor Greg Abbott fought to be in trouble with the hard right of his party, won renomination over 2 decidedly right-of-center opponents with nearly 70% of the vote. In the race for attorney general, Ken Paxton, the incumbent, a favorite of conservatives and endorsed by Donald Trump, nonetheless faced charges from former associates that he's guilty of bribery. He's been under indictment for several years for alleged security fraud, and he's admitted to an extramarital affair. That kept him below 50% of the vote, and he's in a runoff with a familiar name, Bush, that is, George P. Bush, state land commissioner and nephew and grandson of presidents of the United States. We'll see if that name packs as much of a wallop as it used to when he and Paxton meet in a runoff in May. And finally, in the North Dallas area, there was quite a primary. Van Taylor, the incumbent Republican congressman, almost won outright with a majority. But last-minute revelations that he had had an extramarital affair with a woman named Tonya Hoya, the widow of an American who deserted to join ISIS, well, that didn't help a lot. He got about 45% of the vote and then admitted to the affair and said he was stepping down. The married father of 3 did not want to go through a runoff election with this hanging around him, and that means the runner-up, former Collins County judge Keith Self, is destined to be the new congressman from a district that's been in Republican hands since 1968.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. Follow him on Twitter at John Gizzi. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. And I must say, if I can have a biased moment, God bless you, Ukraine.
Thank you for those words, John. It's 7:18. This is the Saturday morning update on WMAO. We'll be talking with Cheryl Atkinson next, and then we've got Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer coming up and KT McFarland as well. So plenty to cover here on the Saturday morning update. Michelle Murray's in the WMAO Traffic Center right now.
66 inbound and outbound on the Roosevelt Bridge. Only two lanes get by due to emergency inspection and repair work that is taking place. And the off-ramp from westbound 66 to go on to Nutley Street is closed for long-term road work, but detours are posted. In the district, a portion of L Street is closed between K Street and 14th Street in Southeast for water repairs. And in Upper Marlboro, keep in mind that the ramp from Pennsylvania Avenue northbound to go on to northbound Ritchie Marlboro Road is closed for emergency road work. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WML Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Temperatures will really warm as we head towards the weekend. Highs today into the low and mid-60s. We will see some morning clouds followed by afternoon sunshine. Later on tonight, mostly cloudy skies. Low temperatures not really going to drop, mainly into the 50s to near 60 degrees. For your Sunday, very warm. Temperatures in the mid-70s under mostly cloudy skies. Have the chance for some isolated showers. Better chance for rain as we head towards Monday, late afternoon and evening. Ahead of a cold front, high temperatures on Monday near 80 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
34 degrees in the nation's capital, 719 on the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is the Saturday morning update. Thank you for being with us. Cheryl Atkinson is with us each week. She hosts Full Measure. That's tomorrow morning, ABC 7 at 10 o'clock. And Cheryl, wonderful to have you once again this morning.
Great to be here.
Ukraine headlines dominating the news throughout the past several weeks. You know, it's interesting. You wrote a number of books, including The Smear, How Shady Political Operatives and Fake News Control What You See, What You Think, and How You Vote. Vladimir Putin on Friday issued a warning to journalists and said they face up to 15 years in prison if they report what authorities deem as false reports about the military, a.k.a. fake news. Tell us a little bit about what you're learning on the propaganda war with Russia and Ukraine.
Well, certainly he has reason for concern. There is a propaganda war going on, obviously, between Russia and Ukraine. Ukraine is winning it because more here are reporting the Ukrainian side of things. And it's not to say that there, you know, isn't legitimate news being reported, of course, from Ukraine's side. But there are other facets to the story. And don't we want to hear them? I feel like we're really only reporting part of it. When I worked at CNN, when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait, Gulf War I, we reported a lot about what Saddam Hussein's supposed thinking was, rationale, not because we agreed with it, but because it's important to know. And I feel like we're just getting Putin as a madman and not a lot of context that would help us understand, you know, what we're doing, what Ukraine is doing. And I'll just toss two things out there. Ukraine, it turns out, I believe, not that I'm any expert, I've been trying to research, is very split between the pro-Russian side and the pro-European side. So Ukraine is not a monolithic country that just has one group of people, and they've been fighting civil war over this for a long time. Secondly, you know, we all heard that story of the soldiers in Ukraine on Snake Island that were heroes in those early hours because the Russians, you know, attacked them and they said, go F yourself, and died in a blaze of glory. And we all reported were honored posthumously by Ukraine's president. And now it's being reported that didn't happen. The guys are alive. You know, we just have to be more careful, I think, in the media about taking stuff, particularly during, I guess, what you call fog of war. And regardless of how we personally feel or whose side we may be on, we can't just report, you know, unattributed and unverified things as if they're true or as if we know they're true. Without being very careful, we're just going to be pawns in something, some kind of information game at a very dangerous time.
And then there's always the rush to be the first to break the story.
Yeah, you know, I get that, but there's also a way to tell the stories and to be prompt, but also be very careful with explaining what we do and don't know rather than pretending to be an authority on something that we can't really verify.
You know, it's been years since we've heard of emphasis in the news about earmarks on Capitol Hill. Of course, the favors that are done for the individual senators and congressmen in their districts when it comes to legislation being financed for their little pet projects. But you're always kind of ahead of the curve on some of these stories that they'd rather you didn't hear. Tell us about earmarks.
You know, earmarks are taxpayer grants of taxpayer money, our money, made by an individual member of Congress to their district, to some project or person they like, without the normal oversight. And they got to be so controversial years ago. And I was credited or blamed, however you look at it, by many on Capitol Hill because I did a weekly story on CBS looking at a Democrat or Republican earmark. There was a lot of waste, fraud, abuse. There were criminal charges that came of this. It got to be so controversial, as I said, I think they put a lot of blame on the stories I did at CBS, but earmarks were banned under pressure from all of this by both parties. Well, lo and behold, I learned they've made this quiet comeback under the Democrat leadership of Congress on Capitol Hill, with the support, by the way, of some Republicans. They've given them new names. They call them, I think, community service grants, and they're trying to distance them from their sordid past. But will they really be able to do that? I mean, I talked to members, I talked to both Democrats and Republicans in this story, my cover story, about how, you know, it's just too tempting in some cases for party leaders to use these earmarks that they hand out to members as rewards or punishment for their votes and their behavior. And it just gets to be very tempting to abuse them. Although I will say, the Democrats I talked to say that's not going to happen this time. There's going to be better oversight.
You know, it seems that whenever there is a Department of Justice investigation that's somewhat high profile, it just seems to go on forever. And by the time there's some kind of resolution, it's almost like we've forgotten the whole thing. And give us an update on what you're finding out about the John Durham probe.
Well, let me just say, depends on which side you're on, because some of the investigations and trials for people accused in Trump's orbit, for example, have happened quite promptly, you know, fairly quickly in the scheme of things. But overall, I think a lot of people think justice just takes far too long. And the Durham probe is the independent, supposed independent look at possible FBI misconduct in trying basically to frame Trump as a Russian collusionist or some sort of illicit Russian activity. Well, what did the FBI do? They already have a guilty plea from an FBI attorney for misconduct and criminal activity. They've got a couple of indictments going, but it's been... We're ending 3 years of this probe, and it was originally promised before the last election. A report was promised the summer before. It never came. And so I talked to Congressman Daryl Issa, Republican, who's saying, what good does it really do in the scheme of things if you wait 1, 2, 3, 5 years for something that's impacting our political scene? If there was election-related misconduct, but now none of that's exposed and nobody's punished for it until years later, then haven't they gotten away with it? So we're kind of asking those difficult questions about how long this takes.
And that's all tomorrow morning, ABC 7 at 10 o'clock. It's Full Measure with Cheryl Atkinson. And as always, thank you very much.
Thank you.
It is 7:26. This is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Stay with us. 7:30 news coming up with Heather Curtis, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and KT McFarland.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
And some of the latest developments overnight from Ukraine. The United States Senate has been invited to participate in a virtual meeting with President Zelensky this morning. All U.S. senators are invited to participate in the meeting. It takes place virtually at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Ukrainian authorities have put plans to evacuate civilians from the Mariupol region on hold. They're citing Russian violations of an agreed pause in fire. So that effort to get the evacuation routes squared away now on hold. Russian forces have occupied Ukraine's largest nuclear power plant. Of course, there was the large fire there yesterday. Ukrainian authorities have said this morning that radiation levels appear normal. Western intelligence officials expect Russia to increase the pace and the strength of strikes on key population centers, including the capital of Kyiv, and that escalation could lead to a high number of civilian casualties. And here in the U.S., in California, the first state now to have an average gas price above $5 a gallon, the national average record for gasoline, $4.11, set in 2008, is within sight. It would be a huge jump from a year ago. The national average price was $2.75 a gallon. What is Congress doing? Lawmakers pushing a bipartisan effort to end all imports of Russian oil and sanction Russia's energy sector. That sector so far has been left mostly untouched, speaks to the nature of the global energy supply. Russia was the world's number two oil producer last year, behind the U.S. The disruption in oil exports would drive costs up everywhere. Politicians are willing to pay the price. Nancy Pelosi saying yesterday, "I'm all for that. Ban the oil." It's 7:30. Time now for the news on WMAL with Heather Curtis.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9. WMAL.
News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning, I'm Heather Curtis. Russia is continuing shelling attacks on parts of Ukraine hours after agreeing to a temporary ceasefire in two areas to let women, children, and older people safely escape. More than 200,000 Ukrainian civilians were expected to try to get out while they could this morning. Ukraine's deputy prime minister is appealing to Russia to make good on its ceasefire agreement and let those people leave. Russia's foreign minister says today his country is not targeting civilians. The People's Convoy is preparing to take its fight against COVID restrictions to our area. They got to the Hagerstown Speedway yesterday. They started their trip in California last week.
This type of thing needs to happen to wake people up.
Participants tell 7 News the government's trying to control people too much. The convoy is expected to drive around the Beltway but not go into the district. Virginia State Police spokesperson Corinne Geller tells us they've been preparing and talking to organizers.
To ensure, you know, they understand Virginia's traffic laws. And these communications have also enabled us to share our expectations related to keeping traffic flowing.
Still, she says prepare for some delays. We now know the name of a man who was shot in Northeast D.C. yesterday morning while holding an infant in a car seat in one hand and the hand of a 5-year-old child in the other. Someone walked up to 42-year-old Cedric Miller of Northeast and shot him, according to police. They're still looking for the man who pulled the trigger, but have only a vague description.
This is a really disturbing event, and we really need the public's help in this. It's one of the most horrible things we've had here in the 5th District in several years.
The children were not hurt and went home to their mother. WMAL Sports, the Wizards lost to the Hawks 117-114. Traffic and weather next on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
So far, traffic is moving well this morning on 270 from Clarksburg and Gaithersburg to the Beltway. Northbound on 270 at Shady Grove Road, you will find one lane blocked for road work, but that is not causing any delays. So far, things are in good shape on the Capitol Beltway throughout Maryland and Virginia. Still a work zone reported on the outer loop at Allentown Road in the left lane, but again, that is not causing any delays. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A fair amount of clouds to start the day on this Saturday, but we will see afternoon sunshine. Much warmer conditions, only reached the 40s yesterday. We'll reach the low to mid-60s this afternoon. Tonight, mostly cloudy skies, low temperatures near 60 degrees. We'll see even warmer conditions on your Sunday. High temperatures into the mid-70s under mostly cloudy skies. Chance for a few showers. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
37 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
7:35, Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us every week. He is the author of Operation Dark Heart, and he is the president of the London Center for Policy Research. He is a former CIA-trained intelligence operative. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to join you.
Well, I appreciate it. It's day 10 of the Russian invasion, Tony, and everybody's talking about a no-fly zone. President Zelensky is begging for a no-fly zone. He will address the U.S. Senate in a virtual meeting this morning at 9:30, and I'm sure he will ask again about that no-fly zone. And I understand that NATO and many people in the administration very concerned that that would ratchet things up with Russia, possibly leading to a broader war and potentially a world war. Your thoughts on a no-fly zone, Tony, and if we can't do that, what can we do maybe that we're not doing?
Yeah, so it's a no-fly zone is a no-go. It's not going to happen, and it shouldn't happen. Talk about, you know, every step of the way, Putin has kind of plotted this through, and this is a lose-lose. If we do that, if we, United States and NATO, come in and do that, that justifies his paranoia and then would open the door for his open and expanded aggression against NATO. I mean, this would instantly, this is like what they call, a fireman call a flashover. This is where, you get a room full of oxygen, just kind of get heating up. This would be the flashover point. This would do it. And secondly, along that same line, this is what Putin would love to have, is the opportunity to say, see, I told you so, here we go. So it's just not practical. And secondly, Rick, if you're trying to save a drowning man or woman, you throw them a life preserver, you don't jump in and let them pull you down and drown you. And that's what, because NATO's not ready to fight. So, despite what Blinken says, you just look at the force structure, the lack of international exercises to combine forces in a cohesive way to fight a large peer-to-peer fight. They're not ready. So it's just not a good idea. And I know Ukraine is asking for all of this, but there's laws that go way back before, the current government was there that really just, it's just not a good idea because it wouldn't work and it would just expand the war instantly. What we can do, after speaking to a number of the old Reagan cabinet folks, I've always turned to them to look at how they were able to defeat the Soviet Union. And there's a number of things we can and should do. One of the things that they were able to do during the Cold War is actually focus on going after leaders. Putin has vulnerabilities. Rick, I would argue that nobody has actually gotten under his skin yet. And as long as you let him have the initiative, he's going to take it. The air restrictions over Ukraine would be something he wants, so you don't want to do that. There's other things that he values. You need to make sure that you threaten those things he values. One of those things is his life. Make this personal. And I don't think that anybody's actually stepped up except for Lindsey Graham, which is what Lindsey is proposing. Not a good idea. That's not the way you do it. You basically say, look, there's going to be things that happen. And this goes to the war crimes issue as well. One of the things we had talked about, and I'll just touch on it here, after the Kosovo War, we actually spent a great deal of time, blood and treasure, going after war criminals. Man, at this point, I think it's pretty clear that Vladimir Putin's a war criminal. So that's something else you put on the table. You start aggressively saying, this is what we're going to do based on your bad behavior. And again, make it personal. And then the biggest thing we could do is not militarily, not something military. It's the issue of oil. Oil has got to be the thing that devastates their ability to make money. 50% of all of Putin and Russia's income comes off their sale of oil. And nobody is threatening that. The longer you allow that to happen, the more they will continue to do the aggressive things they're doing. And oh, by the way, they're going to take your lack of resolve to do something about the oil of the sale as a green light to continue to do what you're doing. Putin has been following the same pattern since Chechnya in the 90s. Think about that. He has done this since he was a deputy to Boris Yeltsin in the 90s. He used the same basic military format, Chechnya and Georgia, and now, an expanded version of that for Ukraine. So we've got to understand that. We've got to get ahead of it. And the way you do that militarily is you start using a lot of special operations forces on the edge. Again, making sure that those things which we can touch, we do. The bottom line is you have to set up an aggressive, credible countervailing force to stop him. And you're not going to do it in Ukraine. Ukraine's done. I hate to say it. I feel bad for the people of Ukraine, but it's done. It's just going to be a matter of time before he just wears them away. We're, I think, in phase two right now. He threw the first wave with the conscripts, the older technology. Let's just throw it in there, see how things go. He's had a number of sequels and trees, which he's been executing. He's on his game plan. We're, like you said, about day 10 into this. It took him 12 days to overcome Georgia. I think he's going to continue to move forward in the current pace he is. And Biden has done nothing to take the initiative away from him.
So we've got weapons coming in from at least 15 nations, but it doesn't seem to be helping. I mean, that convoy has been moving inches a day, and nobody's been able to take out the convoy or at least take out the front end of it and stall them. And they just it's mud and bridges being blown up seem to be the only thing in the way.
Yeah, look, there's going to be some guerrilla activities to do that sort of thing, but all these weapons coming in, Rick, nobody's going to be trained on them. How do you get them out there? How do you get them to the right units? How do you organize the units to be successful? These are all things that are required before a war starts. It's not going to happen during the middle of the time when you've got Russian tanks 10 kilometers away from you and you're trying to figure out how to open a box. It's just not in the cards. So, again, people have to be practical about how they approach this. Unless a near peer comes in, that is to say, like a Germany, Poland, the United States, unless someone comes in, it's not going to matter. You need A-10s, or, you know, reliable A-10s flying multiple sorties over these long rows of Russian trucks. By the way, that's kind of what we figured we would do during the Cold War. That's why we were designing these weapon systems to be able to go into that Soviet rear area to take out all of these long trains, because we knew that they'd have to send tons of equipment forward to continue an offensive. We see this for what it is, as folks who have studied the Russians. The problem is nobody who was in power seemed to be worried about this over the past year.
So why don't we take a couple of A-10s, repaint them, stick the Ukrainian flag on them, and let them rip, and take the serial number off so they can trace it.
We've done that before. Some of the folks listening to this knows that during certain wars in the Middle East, we've done that. And we've had American pilots in those things. And it's not beyond the pale to say, as a matter of fact, I know Zelensky has encouraged this sort of thing. So I come in, do this. You know, look, we had the Flying Tigers in World War II. They flew for China against Japan. It's happened before. But again, Rick, it took over a year to organize the Flying Tigers to go into China to stop the Japanese in 1941. So everything you're saying has merit. The problem is no one who was in any form of authority was able to plan or equip or prepare this for the current situation. And again, it wasn't like we didn't see it come.
President Zelensky has been praised as a leader. He is so brave. He's been out on the streets. He's making video appearances. He's addressing the U.S. Senate this morning. But there have been reportedly at least 3 assassination plots to get him. Tell us a little bit about these plots and who would be plotting, and is it a matter of time?
So we've seen so far the Spetsnaz have been, their version of special forces, have been very willing to put individuals in civilian clothes. I would go so far as to say that you probably were going to come to find that there were units dressed in Ukrainian army garb that was actually Russian special forces. Russia has an amazing ability to basically camouflage its actions. I would say that, again, I don't know any details, but I would say that you've probably had individuals in the peripheral security services of Ukraine essentially have been infiltrated by Russians, and they come to find this out just in time to prevent Zelensky from being killed. I mean, remember, anytime a president moves around here, you know, there's layers of security. Well, if one of those layers is penetrated, you have the potential of someone getting close to the president and doing something. Same thing here with Zelensky. I think it's very possible that they've come to find that there were a number of penetrations of his security systems and details. So I think that's what they're talking about when they mention that.
Is that a war crime?
Well, no, not really. We've been the ones who have artificially said, you know, we're not going to assassinate foreign leaders. If you're a leader during war, you're pretty much free. You know, it's part of the warfare that people do. You know, look, they take out generals all the time. It's not, you know, take out a political leader, you take out a political leader. I would go so far as to say, Rick, I'm sure that they have a list of politicians they're out for. There's some that they want to keep alive because they believe they're going to become the puppets after the fact. But yeah, and by the way, just for reference here, I think it's dangerous for us to be taking the side of Ukraine completely. They're cut out of the same fabric as the Russians regarding governance. They had their own set of oligarchs. They had their own set of corruption. So anytime we all think somehow, we need to jump in with the good guys, the Ukrainians aren't the good guys. There's the reason that they're not in NATO, is because of the layers of corruption that was observed. As I recall, a certain first son, Hunter Biden, was bribed by some of the oligarchs via Burisma. So we have to understand here, there's no good guys in this whole thing. There's a number of interests that both sides have had, and those are what's at play now. The politicians inside of Ukraine are the expression of that corruption. So there's going to be some politicians targeted, some who are not. And the people who lose universally are the people of Ukraine who are caught in the middle of all this nonsense.
There was a report this morning that a Russian TV team, an entire team, walked off the set in protest.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about what happens to them next and what happens in this martial law. We got about a minute, minute and a half left.
That's a good question. Well, you know, you've had the same thing. They shut down RT and right there in D.C. I mean, the network itself is shut down. They had a problem in D.C. with members of the Russian television staff just walking off or saying something on air against it. Well, I don't know what's going to happen to them because in Russia, if you do this in Russia, you've essentially opened yourself up to essentially a high crime against the state, and Putin is the state. Putin has become a very strong dictator. I'll just say it. He's a czar. He's the president for life. And anytime you take an action like that to speak against the government, you open yourself up. Heck, if you study the history, if you're Gary Kasparov, the chess player, anytime you speak out against Putin to include running against him for office, you become subject of investigation by the state. This is the old Soviet Union with a nice, Republican veneer with a different color flag. It's all it is. This is the old Soviet Union reinstated. And, Rick, that's what Putin's trying to do, what he's doing within the local level in Russia and Moscow, where these people are going to be subject to very, very severe investigations. He's doing at the international level with his military movement. So it's all about essentially Putin controlling the message and controlling what he believes is the destiny of the Russian people to reclaim those territories that were lost after the Soviet Union fell.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, host of the Thought to Action podcast, which got on this week.
This very issue, we went through the thinking the unthinkable. The question that we've asked ourselves is, what if Putin decides he's going to kick off and follow through with his threat and use a nuclear weapon in Ukraine? What are we going to do about it? And what does that mean? As well as a thing on Build Back Better and the World Economic Forum, where we talked about the dangers of this whole issue relating to how we need to look at the real dangers of Klaus Schwab and all those folks over there trying to project this idea that we need to change capitalism to something different. So those are the two things we're focused on.
You'll find that at londoncenter.org. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, thank you very much.
Thank you.
KT McFarland up next. First, Michelle Murray's in the WMIL Traffic Center.
In Virginia and Fairfax, eastbound on Fairfax Boulevard, the right lane is closed from Plantation Parkway to Pickett Road for Storm Jay maintenance work. Also in Prince George's County, use caution on Route 1 north and south and at Laurel Avenue where the right lane is closed for utility repairs. Also, you will find road work in place right now on 66 inbound and outbound at the Roosevelt Bridge. Emergency road work there. Only two lanes getting by in each direction. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMIL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Temperatures will really warm as we head towards the weekend highs today into the low and mid-60s. We will see some morning clouds followed by afternoon sunshine. Later on tonight, mostly cloudy skies. Low temperatures not really going to drop, mainly into the 50s to near 60 degrees. For your Sunday, very warm. Temperatures in the mid-70s under mostly cloudy skies. Have the chance for some isolated showers. Better chance for rain as we head towards Monday, late afternoon and evening. Ahead of a cold front, high temperatures on Monday near 80 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
Current temperature in the nation's capital, 34 degrees. It's 7:51 on the Saturday morning update.
Monday, Victor Davis Hanson with the latest on Ukraine, plus Joe DeGeneva and Julie Gunlock, O'Connor and Company, 5 to 9 a.m. on WMAL.
We are joined by KT McFarland. She is President Trump's first Deputy National Security Advisor, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, an honor as always to have you with us.
It's an honor and a pleasure, too.
So many questions. Everybody's talking about energy, oil sanctions. What can we do to stop Vladimir Putin? Start off, how did we get where we are? For 4 years in the Trump administration, Putin, for whatever reason, was kept in check. And within the first year of the Biden administration, he has planned and executed the invasion of Ukraine. What went wrong?
It's all been about energy, and it's always been about energy, going back 50 years. Russia's main export is oil and natural gas. Nobody buys Russian computers. Nobody buys Russian fashion. Nobody buys, I guess, vodka. But other than that, it's oil and natural gas. And when oil prices are high, Russia rebuilds its military and it gets adventurous. When they're low, Russia's broke and they're scrambling to make payroll. So this goes back to the 1970s. 1970s, the Arab oil embargo. Energy prices were really high. There was gas rationing in the United States. We didn't, we weren't being supplied, and the prices were just through the roof. That's what led the inflation of the 1970s. What did Putin do? Rebuilt the military, proxy wars abroad. In the 1980s, Reagan drove down the price of oil. What happened? Russia was broke. We won the Cold War. And then in the 90s, Russia was broke. In the early 2000s, the prices of energy started going up after September 11th. What happened? Putin was rich again. So he rebuilt his military. He invaded Georgia. In 2014, he invaded Crimea. Trump came in, and because of fracking, we suddenly had a new energy industry in the United States. We could get oil from rocks and shale rocks. We could get oil and natural gas. So America's energy industry rebounds. We're rich again, and the price of energy is low. What happens to Russia? They're broke. All of a sudden, energy went from over $100 a barrel to $40 a barrel under President Trump. Russia stays in the box. President Biden comes in, undoes all of the Trump stuff, stops with the war on fossil fuels. Predictably, what happens? The price of oil and natural gas goes way up. I mean, it's doubled in just in less than a year. What happens to Putin? He's rich again. So what does he want to do? He wants Ukraine. And that's exactly what's happened now. Now the prices are sky high. So his coffers are very, very full. From a financial perspective, war is expensive. And unless you have the money in the bank to do it, you can't do it.
So what do we do now in terms of oil sanctions? Even Speaker Pelosi said yesterday, ban the Russian oil. How practical is that from our national security standpoint? And can we do that?
You know, well, President Biden lost an extraordinary opportunity at the State of the Union because one of the main drivers in Europe for not embracing Ukraine, for not standing up to Russia, is Germany. Germany gets more than half of its energy from Russia. Germany set off on a plan 20 years ago, 30 years ago, to say, well, we're not going to worry about NATO as much. We're not going to sort of contribute much. America can do the military part. We're going to take care of Russia by having an interwoven relationship. We'll import Russian energy, and then they won't dare go to war with us. Well, that hasn't worked out really well because Russia has Germany and Eastern Germany and the former Soviet Union in his line of sight, and he wants to use his energy revenues to do it. So last Sunday, right before the State of the Union, Germany had a 180-degree turn, and the Green Party, the most pro-environment party in Germany, came out and said, we're reassessing our position on fossil fuels. We do not want to be dependent upon Russia. We feel that is a fundamental threat to our national security. And so we are going to go back and use nuclear plants. We are going to start using coal again, and we want to import more energy from other sources. Oh, and by the way, we're going to rejoin our contribution to NATO. So the Germans did the hard and heavy lifting. All President Biden had to do 48 hours later was say, I've watched the German example. I've seen what's happened in Europe. I see Putin's invasion of Ukraine. American people, here's what I want to say to you. The times are different right now. We have to restart the American energy industry, and we have to do it in order to bankrupt Russia and other bad guys like Iran. And then he could have gone to the Europeans and said, Europeans, you import 50% of your energy from Europe. We're going to help you get off of that addiction. We're going to send you clean, cheap, no strings attached American liquefied natural gas, and here's how we're going to work together so that you'll be energy independent of Russia in a very short period of time. And then I think you should have gone to the Russians and said, you're fighting these wars because you've got high energy prices. We're going to make that not happen. And we are, by the way, because of what's happened in Ukraine and the brave Ukrainian people, we are going to reinvigorate NATO. So, Mr. Putin, you might have thought you were going to break the back of NATO, but in fact, all you've done is stiffen the spine. That's what I would have done.
So
that's not what he did, Rick, though.
Well, a lot of things he hasn't done. And unfortunately, a lot of things he has done. Wanted to ask you real quick about the weaponry. We've seen this convoy, a 40-mile Russian convoy that's been somewhat stalled, but there really hasn't been an opportunity for anybody to make any significant progress in taking it out and damaging it, destroying it. What about the weaponry status? Where were we and where are we now?
Well, the Ukrainians want us, NATO, to guarantee what's called a no-fly zone, so no airplanes can fly anywhere above Ukraine. The problem with that is that would mean we go to war with Russia, because whose airplanes are flying over Ukraine right now? Russia. And so to guarantee a no-fly zone means we, NATO, would have to shoot down Russian aircraft, and Ukraine is not a NATO partner. We are not obliged to do that, and frankly, it would be extremely bad for the world if we did it, because then we really would be in World War III. We can give the Ukrainians the weapons, so maybe they can do it themselves. You know, that was always the Reagan doctrine. That was always even the Nixon doctrine. Give these countries the weapons to defend themselves by themselves. But the other part of it is, it turns out that Russia, the mighty Russian army, turns out not to be that good. Who knew? Everyone assumed that they were really, really well equipped, well prepared, well trained. They knew what they were doing. But now they're seeming to resort to even getting pretty close to using banned weapons of mass destruction. So they're now starting to target civilian populations, because Putin is not going to, he's not going to lose this war, even if he has to just level Ukraine. He's then getting into the territory of Geneva Convention violations and war criminals. So we'll see. This is not over, and it's going to be nastier before it ever gets better. And the tragedy of it is, really, the world did not have to have this war, if only the United States had maintained our energy dominance.
K.T. McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. K.T., thank you so much for your perspectives.
Thank you.
That's it for the Saturday morning update. Garden Sense follows the 8 o'clock news.
WMAL-FM Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9. WMAL-FM.